throwing a frisbee, emailing, texting, opening a jar, or just picking up your favorite book. If your hands or wrists hurt, you're just not enjoying life to the fullest. See the Good Hand Specialist at Wisconsin River Orthopedics. Yes, Wisconsin River Orthopedics are the sports med specialists in Wisconsin Rapids. Call 715-424-1881 and get on the path to relieving pain and restoring life.
It's June Dairy Month, and though more than 5 million people call Wisconsin home, we share our state with close to 1.5 million cows. Those beautiful animals. Yes, okay, I grew up on a dairy farm outside of Green Bay. They've been here since before we became a state. Can you answer this? Most of our cows' milk currently makes which product? Is it butter, cheese, or ice cream? The answer coming up. Wisconsin's first official milk plant, 1894 in the Walpole Pawn area of Fond du Lac County. Fast forward more than 120 years, now farmer-owned with a second location in the Outagamie County village of Black Creek, the Saputo plant is even featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels for its award-winning cheesemaking. So did you guess? Most of our cow's milk, 90% of it currently makes cheese. Gouda for you. Join us in thanking our farmers by celebrating June Dairy Month. For the Civic Media Network, I'm Terry Barr.
Let's get back to the game here on WFHR.
To the top of the eighth, we go here on WFHR. Joey Fear with you, excited to bring you this coverage. And at the end of the game here, Raptors lead 3-2 as Blake Barker will step in. Hasn't had a lot of work for the Raptors so far. The Chardon, Ohio native out of Seton Hill University with one innings pitch so far. And Gaiman appeared as he has a strikeout on four batters face. This is a guy, well, we'll face Ryan Burr, throws across the plate for a strike. He comes from baseball royalty as his father, Len Barker, played quite a while in the majors. Played for the Texas Rangers, the Cleveland Guardians, which they were the Indians at the time, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Atlanta Braves. Also, he had a stint with the Milwaukee Brewers as well. So a guy that has come from a baseball family as he grew up around it, and sits at the 1-1 inside edge for a ball 2-1 on Ryan Burr, the first baseman. So, yeah, Blake Barker, the son of Len Barker, who was able to throw a perfect game as well in his time in the majors. So, great to have Blake here as a 2-1, a ground ball over to the third baseman. Basir, the throw across the diamond on a one-hop bounce. Sheeler's not able to field it. So, Burr's going to get to first, and an error there for the Raptors. Not what they would have liked, as this brings up Dalton Pearson, the first error of the game, and it belongs to Wisconsin Rapids here in the top of the eighth. And this is not the time for the Raptors to get some errors because it is a time for the Raptors. They're going to have to get some outs, and they're going to need to find a way. As first pitch on the way, outside edge for a ball 1-0. So Burr stands at first. Barker will come set. Yeah, Basir, a decent throw over to first, but it skipped on a one-hop bounce as a bunt attempt on the right side for a strike. It was foul. A ball and a strike. Barker, the left-hander, was able to get a strikeout back on June the 5th against Madison in that 9-1 victory for the Raptors. As the 1-1, bunts pops up on the right side, 1-2. Yeah, it's very clear what Dalton Pearson is trying to do. Advance Burr to second, and Pearson is very fast himself. He can get on base in a quick moment. So, out of Atlanta, Georgia, and the Georgia State products, leading off here in the top of the order. Ball and two strikes. Barker comes set. delivers the 1-2, swinging a ball popped up on the right side in foul territory, stays at 1-2. Raptors lead 3-2. Brady Jurgela got things going with a solo shot in the top of the second as an RBI double came from Vincent Samuel. Excuse me, from McGann, which sent Samuel home as the 1-2 outside edge, 2-2. Samuel was able to get to a double, and then McGann had an RBI double right after it as after he lined a ball into left field, which made it 2-0. But Chris Conniff, in the bottom of the third, got a two-run shot as the 2-2 fouled on the right side. Stays here at 2-2. Barker has a big arm. He threw that at 92 miles per hour. But then a ground out from Alex Duffy at first. But it was able to send Garrett Broussard for the third run. But no outs here. Barker comes set, delivers a 2-2. Pearson once again fouled on the right side. Basically the same pitch. That came in at 93 miles per hour. One error as Jack Passier threw it across the diamond to Sheeler. Skipped on a one-hop bounce, and it went through the glove of Danny at first. So, and the Raptors get one of those double plays that they're so accustomed to doing as the 2-2 driven out into center field. This goes right into the glove of Ty Johnson, one down here in the top of the eighth. So now brings up Michael Adair. Betting a 185. Guy has 7 RBIs out of the University of Dayton in the Atlantic 10 Conference. And a Fort Gibson, Oklahoma product. As a steal attempt, the throw from Duffy way off the mark. And just fortunate Broussard was able to reach to his right and able to make that catch, but stealing successfully is Ryan Burr. So now the tying run on second here at top eight. So Duffy going to have a word with Barker on the mound. But Duffy fortunate not to see that ball go behind Broussard. That was way off the mark. But fortunate a returning Rafter and shortstop. So the shortstop, Garrett Broussard, is all the way near second. Moved over in between first and second is the second baseman, Chris Conniff. So a different defensive alignment here for the Raptors defense. Parker swinging a miss upstairs on Adair, 0-2. Came in at 91 miles per hour. Barker has a big arm. As he comes set. No balls and two strikes. Sets, delivers, outside edge for a ball. 1-2. So that came in at 91 miles per hour. Raptors 3, Woodchucks 2, tying run, Ryan Burr, the first baseman on second. Barker comes set, 1-2, foul tipped on the left side near the dugout of the Raptors. Can the Raptors find a way here to get three outs? They already have one down. They're two away. Barker glances at second and does it a second time. Comes set, fires the 1-2, a check swing, and did he go? The third base umpire says he did for the second out. So Blake Barker getting a strikeout. And his first of an appearance today, but Jesse Donahoe, a guy who has been red hot before coming into the series. He batted a 524 coming into yesterday, now batting a 440. So his number has dropped, but a guy you just can't mess around with. He has 11 hits and 9 RBIs and 2 home runs as well. So Barker looks towards second, delivers, and outside edge for a strike, 0-1. Tying run on second, Ryan Burr, the leading run at the plate for Jesse Donahoe. Donahoe, the left-hander on Barker, 0-1, outside for a ball, 1-1. Barker will come set, looks at second, and fires the 1-1. Donahoe drives one out into center field into Ty Johnson for the third out. So the Rafters are able to retire the side as we head to the bottom of the eighth inning. Rafters 3, Woodchucks 2. Don't go away. We'll be back in a moment.
You have been listening to Rafters Baseball here on WFHR. Brought to you by Wisconsin River Orthopedics, Amber Johnson, Mid-State Technical College, Skyward, Aspirus Health, Solaris, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Delta Dental of Wisconsin, SNS Distributing, El Cafe, Edward Jones Sky Manning, Comfort Air Heating Cooling Fireplaces, Crescenda Next Home Partners, and Dixon Gun Shop. Stream every game all season long at WFHR.com or through the Civic Media app. Rafters Baseball is brought to you by Edward Jones, a financial services firm that takes a personalized approach to investing to serve its clients. Learn how Edward Jones can help you reach your financial goals. Visit EdwardJones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC. In Wisconsin Rapids, your Edward Jones financial advisors are Sharon Zeman, Guy Manning, Clay Kanoki, and Joe Arnold. For questions about current investments, retirement, or end-of-life issues, contact your local Edward Jones advisor today.
They spend their work life helping others. Police officers, firefighters, active and retired military service members, first responders, healthcare workers, and teachers. Chris Inda, realtor with Next Home Partners, helps finding their home life a little easier.
Hi, I'm Chris Inda. As a veteran myself, I know how important it is to have a place you can rest, recuperate, and call home.
Ask about the Homes for Heroes program today at 715-741-1851 or search for Chris Inda Realty on Facebook.
Now, let's get back to exciting Rafters baseball here on WFHR.
To the bottom of the eighth we go here on WFHR. Joey Fear with you as the Rafters lead 3-2 in a tight game as Ty Johnson is due up. He backs away from the first pitch, sees a ball down in the dirt, 1-0. Johnson 1-for-3 today as the 1-0 outside from Santangelo. Two balls and no strikes. Flower Mound, Texas native, is inside for the third ball. So three balls and no strikes now. Rafters have taken their first lead of the game in the bottom of the seventh. The 3-0 for a strike inside of the zone. 3-1. Lights have started to turn on here at Witterfield, and sun is slowly setting. The 3-1. Johnson swinging a miss outside edge. 3-2. Off-speed pitch, 83 miles per hour. Rafters looking for three in a row to get back to 500. Woodchucks will drop three straight, but the full count. As that ball goes off of Johnson's left angle, the throw from McCann over to Burr at first for the first out. So now Chris Conniff, the man responsible for two runs in this game with a two-run shot, is due up. And the Wagner College products And kind of a guy that batted a 250 last year with 128 at-bats, 23 runs, 32 hits, and 18 RBIs. Batting a 455 as he's up in the count 1-0, swinging a miss inside for a strike, 1-1. One down here in the bottom of the eighth for the Woodchucks. Rafters have out-hit Wausau 4-3. The 1-1 curveball comes in low for the second ball, 2-1. That was at 80 miles per hour. Two balls and a strike with one out, the 2-1. Outside for the third ball, so 3-1. Santangelo out of Towson. The second Towson pitcher today for the Woodchucks. The 3-1 upstairs and outside for ball number four. So Conniff will take first. And now this brings up Jack Basir. Pepperdine Products. And he send another hit for the Rafters. Only 7 hits combined this game between two teams. 4 of them belong to the Rafters. And Wisconsin Rapids has committed an error. 1 out, first pitch outside for a ball, 1-0. So 1 out here. Conniff, big leadoff at first. The 1-0 down low, and that throws from McGann to Burr at first. And Conniff slides safe in time, but boy, that was close. It looks like on the far side, on the left side, Julian Tristan is warming up, and a guy that we're going to hear his name called very soon. He's been called in on these attempts, a guy that's already had 2 saves. So, but the Rafters are still up to bat. They have 1 out. Conniff leads off at first. Kirk Schreider having a word with Basir and Conniff and a mound visit here from one of the Woodchucks coaches. One down here. Conniff is not leading off at first. He's staying put on the bag. So perhaps that's what Kirk told him, but now he is leading off and glancing at the pitcher. So a 2-0 from Basir, and Basir sees a strike, 2-1. A little bit quiet here at Winterfield, but the Rafters are up 3-2. As one down, Santangelo sets the 2-1 outside edge, but Chris Conniff is going to take second, the throw over from McCann, and got him safe. He was safe. So that went to Donahoe at second. Conniff will get to advance to second now. And now a runner in scoring position for the Rafters. 3 balls and a strike. So perhaps that's what Kirk told Chris to, hey, you have the green light to steal. And he surely did there. So 1 out. The 3-1. Foul tipped out on the right side. 3-2 now. Rafters in front. They're going to have to play one half inning of baseball at least left. So are they able to get it done? But on the offensive side of the ball, 1 out here. Basir stands in. a full count delivery and popped up out on the right side into the right fielder as he reaches out and makes the catch was Michael Adair. So two down for the Woodchucks, bottom eight, as Danny Sheeler, the left-hander. Sheeler's grounded out twice. Hasn't able to get a hit today. He's 0 for 2, so Conniff at second, and Sheeler stands in. First pitch on the way, down low, and out of the zone, 1-0. A ball and no strikes. The 1-0, out and away again, 2-0. Angelo Santangelo is going to have to recompose himself because he's down on the count, and there's two down, though. Steps off the mound for a sec and having a word with his catcher, Matt McGann. Calls him towards the mound. Lights have fully turned on here at Witter Field. And McGann jogs back to home plate. Santangelo sets. Two outs, two balls and no strikes. Conniff the leadoff at second. A 2-0 pitch inside, down for a ball, 3-0 now. Danny Sheeler has had excellent plate discipline at this at-bat. Not swinging at anything. Knowing the pitches are outside of the zone. So two outs. Perhaps does he swing at one now? The 3-0 inside for ball four. So Danny Sheeler at first, Chris Conniff at second, and now this brings up Garrett Broussard, the shortstop, who's popped out twice, but been able to get home as well. He's popped out. He's been able to get on base with a walk. So two outs. Sheeler at first, and, you know, this guy, Santangelo, has really struggled throwing strikes as he does one there outside of the edge, 0-1. But if you're Garrett Broussard, how do you play this? You possibly start to swing at a few that he hasn't been able to find the strike zone hardly at all. So Sheeler at first, Conniff at second, the 0-1 inside. Or do you put the pressure on? You have to force him to throw strikes. That's going to be the decider. Your Rafters 3, Woodchucks 2. They've out hit Wausau 4-3. But this game has been about dead even. It was Alex Duffy, the 1-1 inside. And that looks like that glimpses the inside of Broussard. As two balls and a strike now. Two down here. Bottom eight. Broussard pops one up on the backside behind home plate. 2-2 now. Brock Moss having a word with his infield and Santangelo, as it looks like a pitching change could be in store, and Santangelo's day looks to be done. So with two outs and two balls and two strikes, Brock Moss, the head manager, going to go to his bullpen here and perhaps Cesar Avila at a University via at the University of Cumberland's and the Livingston, California native is due up here. Two outs as Shuler and Conifer run back towards Kirk Schreider along with Broussard near the Rafters dugout. So warming up is Avia, a junior wearing the number 24 jersey for Wausau. Trying to figure out, well, what's the best course of action? Is Wausau going to get reps, or does he need a strike? I mean, obviously, you know, you need that third strike to get that third out, but, you know, at a time where it's two balls and two strikes, I mean, given Santangelo has struggled to throw strikes, those two strikes at this at-bat came from foul balls. So what do you do here? I mean, it's an interesting formation, and it's an interesting position switch as a new pitcher is here. So we're going to find out if the Rafters are going to continue this bottom of the eighth inning with two runners on. But are the Wausau Woodchucks going to find a way to get that third strike and the third out and go into the top of the ninth? Being down 3-2, they're down 3-2 regardless. So it's interesting that Brock Moss has pulled his pitcher out with two outs and a 2-2 count. But perhaps he feels Avia can get a strike here. He's listed at 6'3". So Avia with two outs. Looking for his first pitch of the game. Ball behind his back. Likes the pitch, and comes set. A 2-2 serve, curveball down and low, outside of the zone. So 3-2 now, with two outs. Full count. This would be big for the Rafters. They can get the bases loaded, or perhaps is it the third out? The 3-2, swing and a miss outside edge. Broussard went after it. And was just a little bit late. So the Rafters still lead 3-2. Do they have one more inning in them as we head to the top of the ninth here on WFHR?
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually my husband. He just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope. To give them hope that mom is going to be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crew to tase at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man, it all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Now, let's get back to exciting Rafters baseball here on WFHR.
We return to the top of the ninth inning. Do the Rafters have three more outs? And somebody that's been called upon in this situation a couple times has been Julian Tristan. He's had three games with two saves, four innings pitched, and three strikeouts. So Tristan man of Westcliff University, a redshirt senior from Irvine, California, will face Michael McGinnis as the first pitch has a foul tipped on the backside, 0-1. Tristan isn't shy to this moment. He knows that he has been in this situation, the 0-1, inside, up and away for a ball, so 1-1. This would be a big win for the Rafters, sweeping the Woodchucks and getting their third win in a row. Are they able to do it? The 1-1 from Tristan. Swing and a miss outside. 1-2. So Michael McGinnis, who struck out looking, has been walked, and he's also grounded out as well. And Georgia State product, Tristan, the 1-2 outside. Ball comes in high, 2-2. The 2-2 from Tristan, swing and a miss. Backside, that goes into the right glove of Duffy, and he throws it over to first for the tag out. So there's one down for the Rafters as Brady Jurgela, a guy that's hit a home run in the top of the second inning, a solo shot to right center field. Tristan on Jurgela. Jurgela, the left-hander, and the right-handed pitcher of Julian Tristan. First pitch, swinging a ground ball over to the second baseman in Conniff. The flip over to first is right on cue for the second out. So two down for the Rafters. They're one away from getting back to 500 and 5-5 on the season. As this brings up Matt Del Sol. Matt Del Sol, the shortstop today, as Tristan, first pitch on the way, inside edge, 4-1, 1-0. As Del Sol sees the 1-0 and foul tipped off of his left ankle. Boy, that's going to hurt as he went down to the ground on his knees and walking that one up. That does not feel good. That's going to be a strike. It's 1-1, but Del Sol with the bright orange cleats. Frustrated on that as he was hit. Two down here for the Rafters. Julian Tristan looking for his third save of the season in four games of work. Del Sol will get back into the zone. Come set. Two down here for the Rafters. Here's the 1-1 from Tristan. Swing and a miss. Curveball comes in at 77 miles per hour. 1-2. The Irvine, California product. Does he have another one in him? The 1-2 inside. And that ball's popped up into shallow left. Running under it and making the catch is Ty Johnson. As he fell while doing it for the third out. So the Rafters come back in this game and win a big win. They sweep the Woodchucks 3-2 in this game. Three straight for the Rafters. They get back to 5-5, and this team is starting to feel hot right now. They've out-hit Wausau 4-3. They committed an error, but for them, Chris Conniff, a two-run shot in the bottom of the third after they were down 2-0 in the top of the second, but then a sack grounder to Ryan Burr, the first baseman, which sent Broussard home. And Duffy was able to get all over that. So the Rafters are able to win 3-2, and they get back to 5-5 on the season. For Wisconsin Rapids, for the Rafters, and for everybody at WFHR, my name is Joey Fiore saying so long. From Witter Field, we'll see you tomorrow in Green Bay. First pitch is scheduled at 6:35. Good night, everybody.
You have been listening to Rafters Baseball here on WFHR. Brought to you by Wisconsin River Orthopedics, Amber Johnson, Mid-State Technical College, Skyward, Aspirus Health, Solaris, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Delta Dental of Wisconsin, SNS Distributing, El Cafe, Edward Jones Sky Manning,
Comfort Air Heating, Cooling, Fireplaces, Crescenda Next Home Partners, and Dixon Gun Shop. Stream every game all season long at WFHR.com or through the Civic Media app.
I think we're in one of those moments again, and that's why also I'm thrilled to run into some labor folks, some friends, people we've had on the program before. Jose Acala, he is the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades president here at Local 184 in Chicago, also president of LACLA, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement, also district council of 14, a whole resume of stuff. But Jose from 184, how are we doing today, brother?
Good, brother. Doing great. Thanks for having us here.
Congrats on the resume there. Very impressive. But here's the thing. You know, I come here, and one of the things I love about Chicago is its rich labor history. This is the birthplace of the fight for the eight-hour day, for dignity and respect. We're in a moment where we got to fight for that again.
Yeah, we got to go. We need it. Our numbers, we need to bring up our numbers, our labor numbers. We need people. If you know kids that want to join the union, we'll take them in. All throughout District Council 14 and the Chicago Federation of Labor, with the great help of Bob Ryder.
Now, one of the great things that I think that the Biden administration is doing and doing right is talking about reinvesting in infrastructure, reshoring manufacturing, and talking about strengthening unions, what I call the secret sauce of the greatest era, what the greatest generation left for the future. A prosperous working class. Sad reality is, though, we've lost massive brain drain in the skilled trades. We were told, you don't need to build stuff. You don't need to go to college, get a degree, get a corner office, wear the white shirt and the tie. Sad reality is we still need plumbers and pipe fitters and people to pour the concrete and get up on those skyscrapers. We need people who can build stuff.
Correct.
And that's where you guys come in, and where I think the apprenticeship programs in this country that the building trades run, the best kept secret in prosperity that I think there is out there.
We have a great apprenticeship program here in Chicago. Mr. Penske is running it. Out of the International, came to Chicago, and now he's working with the young men and young women that are coming into the trades here. And great, we need, like you said, we're going to need industrial painters for the highways, the bridges, and all the structural painting that needs to be done out there. If you look, go down the expressway, you see all these bridges that need to be redone.
Yep.
We need industrial painters, and that's one of the big things that we need right now.
Yeah, I was talking with Jimmy Williams, your international president, not too long ago, and we were talking about the green energy, and we're talking about a transition and why he supports it. And he goes, those windmills got a lot of paint going to put on those things, and that means jobs, and that means good jobs, family sustaining wage jobs with health care and retirement and dignity, things that our friends on the extreme right not so thrilled with.
No, they don't want unions. We just had some clowns say stay in our lane the other day, and Pritzker and his competitor were on the air, and he said, stay in our lanes. We don't need to stay in our lanes. We know where we're going, and we don't need anybody to tell us where to go.
Well, we stay in our lanes because we built the land.
No, he's trying to tell us that he's trying to marginalize.
No, we built all the lanes. They're all our lanes. I'll stay in the lanes, all of them.
He goes, stay in our lanes. Like, what's this guy talking about?
Because, look, the reality is you look at someone like Rahner, you look at these wealthy people who have figured out how to game the system or exploit people, they wouldn't be where they are without working people who do the work. At the end of the day, every bit of wealth in this country is built by working people. It's time for us to demand a fair share of that.
The sweat and tears, the sweat that we all put in. Just like I give you an example. Our family came here in 1967, the big migration. I'm third generation. My dad's a taper. I'm a taper. John Hancock, Sears, Standard Oil, one mile, Prudential. We built them all. Nobody says anything. Nobody talks about the structures, about what our city's been built on.
Yeah.
Politicians ain't going to build it. The union built it from the ground up.
No, and this is one of the things that I talk about with my building trades friends all the time. Yeah, they'll drive you through a city and go, I did that.
Yeah.
and that again, is this kind of pride in workmanship, but pride in building something and leaving something for the future. And I come back to, while building the skyscrapers and our infrastructure, also demanding a solid piece of the middle class, a solid piece of being able to support your family and not working sun up to sun down, not working 7 days a week, not worrying about health security or retirement security, but having that as part of the work that they do.
Thank God for the unions, we wouldn't have the 8-hour work week. You know, the 8-hour, we get 40 hours. We get 8 hours. Anything over 8 hours is overtime. Time and a half for some places, double time for others. That's put my kids through college. That's put me into retirement.
So let me ask you about this, because, you know, you said you're your third generation, and it used to be one generation after the next. You know, your kids would follow in your footprints and all of that. You know, and look, I want my kids to do better than I do, and that's the American dream. We want our kids to do better. Do you think that has something to do with why we've had this massive skills drain, where people like you, people like me, want our kids to be better than we were, to not have to work as hard as we do, which is why we haven't seen the kind of people in these trades and doing these jobs?
I think it's got a lot to do with stopping the people that want to work. You know, some kids don't want to go to college. Some kids do. In my personal experience, my son just told me he wants to join a trade.
Good for him.
So hopefully I can get him in. But I do see there is a drop in numbers, and that's why, with the help of the District Council and the Chicago Federation of Labor, we'll build up the numbers. We have a program here called Chicago 360, and we're getting kids from high school coming into the trades.
Yeah, I mean, my son who wants to be an engineer, and one of the things that he's going to do, he wants to join the Elevator Mechanics Union, because it's going to give him real-world experience and real-world application, and he wants to do that for several years, and I think he's going to get into it, he's going to find he loves it, he's never going to leave.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things where it can be a transition, it can be something that you learn, you do for several years, and then you move up and on. And in fact, you know, I know a lot of my building trades friends that they got into it. They, you know, they love the work they do, and then they got into the training side of things so that they're training the next generation. And that's, I think, Jose, one of the great things about the trades apprenticeship programs is that it's all really done within. It's by people who actually know what they're doing instead of something who read about it in a book.
You cut your teeth. You put your time in, you cut the teeth through the apprenticeship, and you go on board. Now you said your son's going to be an elevator.
He wants to be, yeah.
Oh, that's one of the best paying jobs in the city here.
Yeah.
And it's anywhere, that's one of the most sought after jobs, because people that can work on elevators, you can go any building and you get.
Yeah, he wants to be able to get electrician and, you know, the carpentry and the pipe fitting and all the things that go into doing that. He wants to learn a little bit of all of it, and you know, he's going to master all of it at some point. I truly believe. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jose Alcala. He's the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades local president here at Local 184. Also, the Alcala president, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. The president here, also District Council 14 here in Chicago. Talking about what's going on with labor and getting kids involved in the apprenticeship programs. But here's the problem, Jose. I'm looking at a moment where there's all of these attacks on labor again. It seems like constant onslaught of attacks where, you know, they don't want people, you know, being able to share in the labor the wealth that their labor creates. Here in Illinois, you've got this workers' rights amendment that I think is so, so very important. And just like, you know, the 8-hour day sprung out of Chicago, I think a push, and I'm hoping a push to demand labor rights again, comes out of Illinois after this next election.
Hopefully on November 8th, it'll pass, and we're out in force. It's a neutral thing. It's not Republican. It's not Democrat. We want the workers' rights amendment to be for everybody, the police officer, the firefighter, the construction worker, the person in the pizza restaurant, the person in the taco place. We want the rights for everybody.
Yeah. Go back to a day where, you know, I was saying this, you know, the other day, that there used to be waiter and waitress unions. Yeah. There used to be, you know, insurance unions. There used to be every different work had a union to represent their interests.
Yeah.
And I think we're kind of in a moment. And I want to get your thoughts on this. I think we're kind of in a moment where, you know, people are looking at what's happened with the economy, how, you know, we're creating a whole lot of have-nots and a few haves, And people are looking at it going, hey, we should be getting some of this. We should be doing better. We shouldn't have to struggle as hard to make ends meet. Yeah, I want a job. I just don't want three or four of them.
Yeah, what you're looking at is like Local One. You want people that are in the service industry that have one job and that pays them enough to cover your bills, your rent, you don't want to work 20,000 jobs to cover that.
But that battle cry that came out of here, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what you will. You should be able to, in this country, in the wealthiest country in the history of civilization, at its wealthiest moment, you should be able to get by on 8 hours of work so that you can enjoy your life. I go back to a friend from years and years ago. He was from Romania, and he said he came to this country so that he could work to live. That the work that he did paid for his life, not live to work, which is what it was like in Romania. He woke up every day, and his only existence was to work every day. Work, 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 work. And that was it.
Yeah.
It says, for me, this is that moment, that pitch for the 8-hour day, that pitch for dignity and respect. This is that moment, I think.
Here in Chicago, you got that. Other parts of the United States, you don't. The southern states, you got people out there just making the minimum. You know, we left in 67, the Great Migration.
Yeah.
And people, I just heard that somebody's telling me that a journeyman in Texas is making like $20-something an hour.
Wow.
And we're making $48, $49 an hour in our trade. That's why my dad left in 67. We haven't turned back. We've been here since.
Yeah, I talk about my story all the time. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. We were poor. We were dirt poor by American standards. And in just my lifetime, I've gone from poverty to living in a solidly middle-class existence. I've led a life, and I've said this a million times, that I could have never imagined. And it has everything to do with that union card I carry in my wallet.
Yeah.
Because, look, I could have worked just as hard, and I know a lot of people who do, and still not have the ability to share in the wealth that my labor creates. And that, to me, is why the unions are so important. Also, it gave me a sense of empowerment, a voice on the job and a voice in society that you can stand up and say no without fear of, hey, I'm going to be fired or ostracized or worse. To me, this is why this is so important.
That's exactly why we want to work. We want to pass the Workers' Right Amendment to protect the workers. If he sees something wrong on the job site, safety-wise, he can report it without any reprisals.
No, I mean, look, as a painter working on these bridges and working on these windmills and working on things, you're not in great.
No.
This isn't the corner office. No. This isn't neat and tidy kind of work. This is dangerous stuff where safety matters. And if you don't have the ability to say, I don't think that's the right thing to do, I don't think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah. And if we pass it, you'll be protected. We're in a sea of red. Illinois is the blue dot all around us.
Yeah.
And we need to keep it blue, and we need to make everything else blue around us.
No, I'm right there with you. Now, you're the president of LaCala, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. This is one of these moments where you go, this is a division, and sadly what happens to us is we get pitted against each other. I want everyone to do well. Explain to me what you guys do, why it's important, and what your goals are.
Well, Labor Council for Latin American Advancement is an arm of the AFL-CIO, the Illinois AFL-CIO, and the Chicago Federation of Labor. And we reach out for our Hispanic brothers and sisters. You don't have to be Hispanic to be part of LACLA. It's open to everybody. They're giving it the voice to the person that, like you said, is afraid to say something. We're here to advocate for them. And that's what it is. We bring people into the labor movement.
Yeah, for me, the idea is bringing people together. Doesn't matter. You know, as a kid, like I said, I grew up in a predominantly black housing project. The one thing that I knew when I learned very young, there's only one color that matters.
Yeah.
It's only just one color. It wasn't black and white.
No.
It was green. And the fact of the matter is we didn't have it. We were all broke.
Yeah.
And for me, this is all about making sure that we have the opportunity for people to lead better lives, to make the next generation better off than we were, and to leave something good behind. This is going to be more simple than that, does it?
Yeah, for our kids, correct.
Absolutely. But, Jose, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts with us.
Thank you, sir.
I'll take a little time. Good stuff. Jose Acala, he is the president of Painters Local 184 here in Chicago, also LACLA president. Check out the work that they do. We'll get links out on social media how you can find them. IUPAT.org, the international site. You want to check out more of what the Painters Union does. Going to take a quick break back here from Chicago, broadcasting from our studios at WCPT AM 820. our radio affiliate here. Quick break, right back.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. Thanks for tuning in to the Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at thericksmithshow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Again, here in Chicago, as we're talking about, the history of what it took to build the eight-hour day, what it took to build the most prosperous working class in history, I have the eye towards the future and what needs to happen. And this workers' rights amendment here, again, can be that springboard, that thing that sweeps across the country. Because, look, the attacks recently have kind of sprung out of here as well with the Janus decision and the assault on public sector workers and their ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, and opportunity. And that's why I've asked Lauren Targos to come talk with us. Lauren is the Executive Vice President of Professional Labor with AFGE Local 704. Lauren, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
This is obviously the birthplace of the Janus decision and all of the attacks that happened on public sector workers. And you, as the Executive Vice President of Professional Labor, you've got to see those attacks happening, as we speak.
Absolutely. And, Biden is certainly, a welcome change from President Trump. But, he still can do more to make sure that all workers are, feeling it from, especially in the federal government, that management is being welcoming to labor instead of antagonistic. We haven't seen that yet, at least in the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yep, and we've got future workers in the background saying, yes, we need to have better rights, because really it is about the future, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And, I have my three-month-old in the background here, and it's definitely given, it's my first kids, and it's definitely given me a better perspective on why this fight is so important, right now, because these are future workers, and, the labor of creating those workers is certainly it's not taken into account in these contracts either.
And congratulations on triplets. So I'm sure everyone's going, why are there babies crying in the background? Because you're surrounded by children.
That's right. Triplets.
And this is one of those moments where you should be highlighting, the fact that how hard it is for working mothers to be able to pursue their career and to be able to raise children and to be in this kind of moment, no?
Yeah, definitely. It's been very enlightening to be, especially talking to mothers of triplets. I'm in these groups where all these triplet moms are juggling everything. And, these babies are going to one day, be the engine who creates profit, be the doctors for when we're elderly or the nurses when we're elderly. And we need to make sure that, we're not putting all the labor to nurture them on the backs of one exasperated woman.
And it sounds like you are almost to that point. Now, we were just in Scranton here recently where, the sad reality is we're sending children in the mines 100 years ago. Can you imagine looking into your children's eyes and knowing that their future is, in a coal mine somewhere at 5 or 6 years old?
It's remarkably cruel. And, we're still, workers today are still fighting to overcome that history. And so it's so important for us to, be teaching our children what the workers before us have overcome and know that the fight hasn't ended until, we are winning the full fruits of our labor.
Now, you know, of course, you know, here in Illinois, you had a former governor who was someone who wanted to continue and accelerate that attack on workers by not just taking the bad no rights at work agenda statewide. They wanted to do it county by county and municipality by municipality, any way to attack your ability to support your family and to do better. They're all on board with.
That's right. Yeah. And if they succeed sometimes in dividing workers from their own interests and dividing workers from seeing the solidarity in their fellow workers and saying, oh, those workers are different and that's why they don't deserve the rights that you want for your family.
But
so it's important for us as we're fighting for this workers' rights amendment to, you know, recognize that all around us we see workers and, you know, there may be different types of exploitation in different industries, but, you know, only in solidarity can we overcome, you know, the exploitation in each of our industries.
Yeah. Now, as Executive Vice President of Professional Labor with AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, you see these attacks firsthand. And there's been an all-out assault on government workers, on people who get up every day and do things for we the people and help us, you know, get the things we need and, you know, do the jobs that have to be done. Tell me what that makes you think, what that makes you feel when you see that.
It definitely makes me, you know, disillusioned. All the problems that we have in our society right now, you know, climate change and, you know, so much. I'm happened to be reading this book on emotional intelligence and seeing how, you know, all the violence we see in our communities, from young children to affecting older adults, you know, all of that is the labor of public sector workers. You know, government employees are the environmental protection agencies are going to be on the front line of fighting climate change. And teachers and social support workers in our schools are the folks who are nurturing our next generation. And, you know, I'd be remiss to not mention, you know, all the turmoil that teachers are dealing with in our schools right now. Health workers, you know, we are public sector workers are the essential workers holding up such important, critical aspects of our society right now. And it's a crime to not give us full access to our workers' rights as we are, you know, holding up this guy right now.
Yeah, but again, it's this division between public sector and private sector that the wealth class seems to again be honing in on to divide working people. Do you see a division? Do you see a difference? Do you see a division there?
I mean, there's certainly, they try to portray a difference, but, you know, I see, you know, the mine workers who are being completely ignored, the warehouse workers, those are all private sector workers who are absolutely entitled to the fruits of their labor, just as public sector workers are. And so it's important for us to, you know, the United States, you know, is a capitalist country. And so even in the public sector, you know, in my job at the Environmental Protection Agency, I'm encouraged sometimes to think of the people I serve as customers. That's the language that's been given in some of our trainings. And so, you know, it's public sector, private sector, the boss is still, you know, the people who benefited from the Citizens United decision at the Supreme Court. This is all about, you know, profit over people, and workers in the public sector and private sector are fighting to put people over profit, and so that their children can, you know, not have to go into whatever metaphorical mines they create in the future.
No, that's an excellent point. So last question I've got for you, as you're looking at this workers' rights amendment, what's the message for people on both sides, the private sector, the public sector, or people who aren't in unions at all? What's the message to them?
You know, especially for folks who aren't in unions at all, I hope, you know, and I think all workers are seeing this, even in work in industries that aren't being unionized. They're organizing, they're talking to each other, they're pushing for the boss to, you know, change their working conditions, even if they aren't formalized into a union just yet. But they're seeing the benefits and the importance of having organized labor in their workplaces. And so this amendment is this is critical to vote yes. Every single worker needs to vote yes, so that workers in Illinois can set the standard for, you know, the country on.
It'd be great if life came with remote control. You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind, like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control. So you're on your own with the WASPs. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.